afternoon. We have finally launched another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And, oh yeah, Bill Cundiff's not here. He's
and I know he pranked us somehow.
We can blame him because he's not here. So it's kind of awesome. We had a little you're locked out of Radio Land moment there. So anyway, Bill's not here because he's working a trade show today. So I guess if you need a tractor, head on down to the fairgrounds. If you live in Shasta County. And if you don't, just forget I said that. But you might want a tractor anyway because they're fun. Unless you live in the city. And then, of course, you should just move. Do the tractor later. Just move first. This segment is brought to you by Powerhouse Solar. Bruce and Susan Blake. Their phone number is 530-275-5600. And you can find them at powerhousesolar.com. They've been around since 2003, and they are the North State's premier solar company. It's a family business, and they're super nice folks. You'll like them. So let's see. Did that. You can find all our information about programs coming up, and we got years of archives for you to listen to. And Robert does a great job of cutting out all the commercial stuff and just giving you the meat. So that's all in the archives at wethepeopleradio.us. And
last week,
and I'm never on my own, so what else do I have to say?
No, I was just going to commend you for the suggestion last week, but we did Throwback Sunday and went back to an old show with you and Elizabeth from 5 years ago.
I know. How much fun was that?
Yeah, that was a blast.
Well, as I was headed to the memorial for the guy who was our guest on that program 5 years ago, plus one day.
Horse Creek Mike.
Yeah, he was recommending that people get a hold of Water Quality Board and file comments on suction dredge mining, and actually that was totally current. So in a freakish reaching out from beyond, that was a pretty wild day all the way around. I'll tell you about it sometime when I don't have
people.
Yeah,
but he said they're taking comments this week.
Yeah, that was actually true.
Fast forward 5 years, and once again, they're taking comments this week.
Yeah, it was weird.
So on the suction dredging.
We will miss Mike. That's why he's not in our chat room. And if you want to join the chat, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and you will find it right there. It's a little brown bar. Says join the chat. So if you're listening live on Sunday afternoon between 12 and 2, join us then.
And if your chat room does not appear for some reason, try a different browser.
Don't you say try a different station.
Oh, no. Oh, God, no.
No, I just turned the channel.
We had a person in the chat earlier this morning that said they could the chat room, the place where the chat room should be on the web page was blank, but when they tried Internet Explorer instead of Chrome, it worked fine. So, although I'm
for
using,
all of those of you who have no idea what he's talking about, just roll with us for a second.
I'm using Chrome here, and it's appearing just fine. So
my mom thinks internet.
Who knows?
Email is the internet. So you see, when you start talking about browsers, she has no idea what you're talking about. All right, back to business. All right, so today we're talking about border security, and I think you'll be really interested to hear what these guys have to say, because this is what they actually do, part of what they actually do. They do all sorts of things. Bruce Moran and Chuck Floyd. Chuck Floyd's the chief executive officer, and Bruce Moran is the national security advisor for Security Solutions Technology. It's a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services. Lord knows they need that from quality professionals. Security assessments, cybersecurity, geospatial program and lifecycle management, change management, logistics, and financial consulting. They provide performance and results-based culture in any organization. Huh? Results-based. That's what we're into. That's the new regime, I guess. I'll just use that word, even though it's kind of a creepy word. We're on a results-based program because we have somebody in the big chair that likes to say you're fired, which is awesome. So for all those of you who are excited about that, you'll be excited about these guys. So Chuck and Bruce, I know you're on two different phones and two different time zones. And by the way, I hate daylight savings time, as I'm sure all of you do too. Who wants to start? I know our first topic is enforce the law, but you guys want to tell people some stuff before we begin?
Okay, well, this is Chuck. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. About a year ago, I wrote the immigration policy and issues for the Trump campaign. They used quite a few of them, and then I wrote a basic border security plan, which I've given to them. And so far, I have not been impressed with what Customs and Border Patrol, Border Protection has been doing. About a week or so ago, they issued what we call an RFI, Request for Information, about wall structures and along the southern border. And so what I would like to suggest to the Department of Homeland Security and Secretary Kelly is something that we did when I was Managing Director of Planning Development at Overseas Building Operations at the U.S. Department of State, where we built at that time a new embassy in China. And so we set up an entirely separate cell to do that project. So I would like to suggest to the Department of Homeland Security that with about 20 professionals, they can set up a separate program management office to do nothing but border, because I've not been impressed with what CBP has come out with so far as their plan in order to do this. And with the plan that I have written and provided, we divide the border up into 50-mile increments for construction contractors to put along the border their physical barrier. That's only one piece of it. It has to be a layered security with seismic technology and sensors, with other kinds of sensors to know vehicles and people and ultralights and tunnels and those sort of things, along with a camera system. And I've been to Israel many, many times. I've seen the fence there, and it works. And so I base my plan off of that, where we have a anti-climb fence. Then you have a vehicle barrier behind that with a dirt road, so you can see if anybody walks or is on that road. And then you have another fence with the cameras and sensors all along, and so you have a, what we call a smart fence. And it's all tied into the operation centers at CBP every 50 miles, and they have quick reaction forces with drones and people and weapons and everything else in order to combat whatever is coming across. The drug cartels are going to give the contractors a run for their money. They don't like it, and so we're going to have a full team of security, from snipers to 50 cal to armored vehicles along the border when we construct the border. And so that's just the first part of what has to happen. I'll turn it over to Bruce, and then we can discuss it from here.
Sure. As we first looked at it in 2004 and 2005, we worked with Senator Frisk, and there was also Bill Lookman and Cherry Harder. It was called the Secure Fence Act, and Chuck designed it back then. So we had, demonstrated that there is a means to actually secure the border, and how that should be done. What Chuck is saying now is that we have the newest high-tech availability that was going to be placed on the border with 24/7 operations. What that means is that the border will be guarded, and not like it is today, and they won't be able to get through. Aaron had asked me a question about that. I mean, you'll have certain things that will, happen along the border, but on a whole, the border's going to be locked down, solid. And the technology Chuck is suggesting is also seismic. So if they're trying to dig a tunnel, if they're running, you can differentiate between a person walking and running, differentiate between an animal. All that will be recorded. And if we feel something is out of whack, then a drone will go out there and look at it, as well as people will be on the border. Like Chuck was saying, there are going to be people every 50 miles in holding centers, and that is not what's being done today. People are off the border, sometimes 50 miles back. So this is going to be a 24/7 on the border, real-time 24/7 operations, which is a lot different.
Oh, that is a lot different.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite sophisticated. Chuck did a tremendous job, and I give him kudos for that, because we've been working on this. And at that time, this is something people probably would not know. He asked me to say a couple of things. We had we were looking at amount of people coming across the border and then people using Spanish surnames who were Islamic. We figured, and I think the figure was about 15,000 a year were coming across the border with Spanish surnames that were Islamic. So if you move that forward from today, you know, back then, you would see that that's about 180,000 people that had come across the border. We don't know where they're at.
Nice.
They snuck recently. FBI agents, we have about 15,000. So basically, you know, what does that say?
You know, just recently, you know, last week, the administration or CBP or the news came out and said, oh, we have less people coming across the border because we arrested less. Well, that's only who they see. You know, they don't see 50 to 60 to 70% of the people coming across the border. And so the numbers may be down, but it's, the numbers are still bogus.
Sure, sure. If your eyes are closed, I mean, that's like dog logic. You know, dogs, if they look away from you, they figure they're not in trouble anymore. Wow. That's not a good strategy to control the actual border. Give me an idea. I know it's kind of a hard number to come up with, but if you had to assign a percentage to the actual southern border, not just the parts that have fence, but I mean the whole darn thing, how much of it is actually secure?
Probably zero.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
0 to 10%. Now, as in San Diego, where Duncan Hunter put the dual fence, is real secure. But I would say maybe 10% of the entire border is secure at this point in time.
Okay, that's scary.
So it's a little porous.
It is slightly porous. So for all those people that are like, oh, no, they've been doing a great job. Yeah, well, they don't have the tools, but we'll get to that. Hold on 1 second, guys, and let's take a real quick break here before we wind up behind like we started. We're trying to catch up here. We are chatting with Bruce Moran and Chuck Floyd from Security Solutions Technology, working on the border, southern border, that is. Talk about the wall and how it's going to get done and what needs to happen. I think you'll be really impressed. WeThePeopleRadio.us is where you find all the information about us and past shows. All right, we're back. All right, we're talking about the border. So, guys, I asked Bruce when I was driving and chatting with him here a couple of weeks ago. I asked him, okay, so everybody talks about securing the border. We've talked about this for a long time. But at the end of every conversation with, you know, anybody that you're having it with, you say, well, do you really think that it can actually be secured? And they say, well, no, we've got tunnels and all this stuff. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of time. We're never going to get it. You guys don't believe that, though.
We don't buy that. We don't buy that theory at all.
I think that's fantastic.
The border can be secure very easily if there's a will with the administration, which under President Trump is the first time in history, that, except for Dwight Eisenhower, that the president wants to secure the border.
That's you know, President Trump delivered on his word as soon as he got elected into office. He put that into effect. So here we are talking about it and talking about how it could be secured and how it can be fully protected and protect people on both sides of the border. People aren't talking about that. That's kind of a question I always bring to my own mind and say, why aren't people talking about the humanitarian reasons why we're putting the border down?
Well, and that's always the excuse that the left uses. We'll never be able to secure it, and so we're just causing human trafficking to happen and all that. But if we can secure the border, we solve that problem. Well, ostensibly we solve that problem, at least with the tunnels and all that stuff.
Well, there's also all the crime on the Mexican side of the border by the drug cartels. The strong arm, the people, the madrasas, and the cartels themselves are making the people pay to come across. Now, if you have a legal vehicle, you know, like a border, you know, like President Trump is talking about, and he's delivering on his word. And then that awe disappears to some degree, you know, and I'm saying probably 80-90%. You won't have the legal side, what we call the informal sector or the black market, as much in these areas. So those kind of ideas are actually the foundation, the way our country was formed, and President Trump is delivering on that.
If, you know, you're talking about tunnels. There's only a few places that tunnels are even feasible in the highly built-up areas, California, et cetera. So those areas can be monitored very easily. Again, we've set up security zones, North and South Korea. We've set it up in Iraq, Afghanistan, all over the world, but here in our own country. And we can do that. Right now, there are 60 feet of authorized border from the previous congressional legislation that we can use, and we can do that within the authorized 60 feet. But, you know, your guests should remember that the border security is only one leg. The other two legs are legislation by Congress that must happen, and then the internal enforcement of ICE has to happen with employers and sanctuary cities and all these other sort of things. And then later on in the program, we can get into how we're going to have Mexico and others pay for the wall. And it's very feasible. It will happen. The U.S. has to front the money, but it will happen.
Nice. Well, that's another thing that, you know, we're just wasting our time and money. They're not going to pay for it, and it'll never work. So in 25 short minutes, we've blown up both those arguments. That's kind of nice.
Yes.
If you
look at the amount of money that goes out of the country, there's about $60-70 billion a year just in remittances out of the country going into Mexico, Central and South America. We spend, the U.S. Taxpayers spend about $100 billion a year just on illegals, from prisons to healthcare to schools to welfare and all those sort of things. Even if we spend a one-time $20 billion, which it won't cost that much, we are well ahead of the game.
God, that's amazing. Go ahead.
Okay, good. That doesn't take into account what's going on right now. We're getting felons out of the country. And by getting the felons out of the country, and as we start to, go into the prisons, which is at about a third illegal aliens, that's going to save us another, we figure, $50 to $90 billion a year, just in that.
Jeez.
So if you're adding on to welfare and all other, we're talking about rebuilding our infrastructure, helping inner-city kids. That's what I'm talking about, the humanitarian side. We're not taking into consideration. And it's not being fully discussed in that manner, because that helps, sustain the country, where those costs aren't just being thrown out the door. Also, if you look at the hospitals and the many hospitals that went out of business on the border, and that there's some reports to say 120, 150 and upwards, but those hospitals went out of business because they were given hospital care for people coming in the emergency room, and they weren't paying. And that's another cost that's layered onto us. Not only do hospitals go out of business, but we pay the cost of the people getting the emergency care in those situations, because that gets added onto our insurance. It's a social impact, economic cost that's not factored in. It's in a huge cost. So far in the discussion, Chuck, you and I had, we've talked about close to $500 billion plus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Once the fence is built or whatever, whether it's a fence at every point or however you do it, once the border is secure, what's the cost to maintain, to keep the electronics going and to have the people patrolling? And is it going to be a lot more than what we're spending now? Because I can't imagine. I mean, we're spending quite a bit of money now.
No, it will not be any more money than what we're spending now. President Trump has said that he wants to hire another 10,000 CBP agents, another 5,000 ICE agents. Even with those, you know, we'll be spending about the same amount of money now. And when you stop the illegals from coming across and you deal with the illegals here, the U.S. taxpayer is going to be about $80 to $100 billion plus in the black and not the red.
Well, that's, I mean, besides the crime and all the different things that come into the country, it's something I think, what do you guys hear? I mean, when you're crafting your plans and all that, you keep really close tabs on what's being said out there. Do you think the bulk of Americans want the border closed?
Well, this is Chuck. I think the bulk of Americans want the border closed. They want the U.S. government to control the border, who comes into the country. Again, the Democrats and the liberals only want one thing, and that's voters. And so if you stop giving through the Department of Labor and Commerce and all the other federal grants to CASA de Maryland and La Raza grant money to go out and train the illegals on how to, you know, spend the system, how to get jobs and all these other sort of things, that's a huge plus. And so, you know, the average American citizen wants the border protected. We have almost 50 million Americans who are out of jobs. Guess who has those jobs? And so we need to take care of Americans first. And again, once we get to where you want to talk about the cost, I'll explain how the cost can be paid for other than the American taxpayer.
Okay. Bob, do we need to take another break here? Not yet. All right, so you want to start into that?
Sure, okay. So currently, through the Department of State and the Department of Defense, Mexico receives about $500 million a year in grants and assistance. We give them all kinds of programs. For an example, last year, the Department of State gave Mexico a grant to provide hardware, software, and all the services in every courthouse in Mexico. And so we paid for computers, we paid for the software, we paid for an installation and everything else. Why would we do that? Right now, we're providing through a branch of the State Department, ATA, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of training to their police enforcement and other agents. You know, just like our DOJ, FBI, DEA, those sort of things. So, you know, Mexico says that they can do it on their own. Let them do it on their own. And we need to just stop. You know, that's $500 million right there in 1 year. The other thing is that we can charge every person that comes from Mexico every day a fee to enter the U.S. to go to work. The other is that we can, you know, charge a fee for every product that is brought into the U.S. There's about $60 to $70 billion a year, that go from the U.S. to Mexico, Central, South American remittances. We need to tax that for now and then stop it. You know, Bank of America, even in Walmart, Walmart has a program set up where you can put, you know, $500 on an account in Oklahoma City and your family in Mexico City can go to Walmart, use Walmart, and draw off that money. And so there are tons and tons of ways to have Mexico and others fund the border security program. The other, what Bruce talked about, are the prisoners. We need to charge every country for every prisoner, illegal alien we have. And if they don't want to pay for it, then we stop our aid to that country and we force them to take their prisoners back. I mean, this is just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Well,
so there are just some of the suggestions that we have to make Mexico and others pay for the wall.
That's nice because, you know, those of us, I don't know about where you guys are, but our jails and we don't have like a, well, we do have a big prison, but, you know, our, just our jails for regular crime are full. And so at the end of the day, unless you've done something crazy bad, you just, you know, you're unfortunately, you're released. That doesn't help the crime, you know. When criminals know nothing will happen, it's pretty straightforward. They're probably doing it again. We had one guy.
I mean, you look in Chicago where Bruce is, they've had over 100 murders so far this year with gang members, mainly due to drugs and human trafficking.
It's terrible. It's terrible can be. I mean, you always see Chicago in the news, but you don't understand, you know, how Chicagoans feel. They always give the political side, but the actual, you know, I would say the feelings and anger and the hostility that people are feeling about this and that and nothing being done, that's, and President Trump said he's going to intervene, and it might be a federal assistance coming in. So that these are programs that federal, the federal programs that President Trump has been saying that are remiss in the cities right now. So he will, you know, effectively, you know, look at these situations, which are unacceptable in the inner cities. You know, you guys, Baltimore too, it's St. Louis, it's up in New York, you know, Harlem, and all these different areas where you have a higher crime rate. You need to, you know, get something in order. And I'm talking about law and order, which Jeff Sessions has just started to put into effect to help the police department. Instead of tying the hands of the police up, you're going to free them to do what they need to do to have normal policing of the streets. Right now, if anything happens, the police are hesitant to actually come in and do their jobs.
Sure. They wind up sued and prosecuted for actually doing their job. We need to take a really quick break, guys. We're going to be right back. We're chatting with Chuck Floyd, Chief Executive Officer, Bruce Moran, National Security Advisor for Security Solutions Technology, talking about the border and law and order and the wall, and I think you'll like it today. Find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Killing us, Bob. The security song, a wall song. What else do you have? It just goes on and on. If you guys ever want to do a musical version of Security Solutions Technology, we can get Bob to work on that for you.
Security Solutions, the musical.
The musical. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so talk to me, guys, about the just the existing rules and regulations. I do not have a background in this at all, but I've always thought, I don't think we're actually following the laws we have on the books. And what would happen if we did?
Well, yeah, this is Chuck. You're absolutely right. The existing laws on the books are not being followed. They were just thrown in the trash can by Obama over the last 8 years. That's why you have DECA and all these Dreamers and all these other programs that he put together. And so if we just go back to the Secure Fence Act under President Bush and enforce the law, and one item that has to be included and is not optional but mandatory is e-verify, where all employers have to verify the Social Security numbers, name, and who is going to be working for them. So many illegals are under this program right now that they don't check. And so Congress made it optional back under Bush, but it's got to be mandatory. And then once you do that, then you have to have the legislation where you can go charge employers, you can arrest employers who hire illegals. The other thing is with the sanctuary cities, these politicians say that they're going to uphold the law and the Constitution and that sort of thing, and they don't. And so we need legislation by Congress to say if a politician such as the mayor of New York, the mayor of Chicago, the governor of California, authorize sanctuary cities where they protect illegals even when they commit crimes, then that person can be arrested and that person is held liable for a civil action.
That might get somebody, you know, it might get them focused, I guess, because right now it's like they're just going full tilt.
I think one of the problems we're looking at is that the people coming across the border aren't really familiar with our laws, and they don't understand them. But when they come here, they're getting a lot of things in terms of government subsidies and that, but they're never really educating what they really need to do to be citizens right away. And what I'm talking about is they learn to get around the system, but they don't learn to abide by the system.
Well, and we're not giving them much incentive when we say, hey, if you can get over the line, then we'll break our own laws for you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, why would they want to follow them?
And then if there are laws being broken and you want to screw them, you go to another state. And then if you want to get away even further or you're stuck where you're at, you go to Sanctuary City.
Yeah. What?
Currently, right now, one quarter of the entire welfare budget of the federal government is paid in California. Where is the biggest illegal sanctuary in the nation? California.
Yep.
Good to be number one in something.
We have no comment for that. You know, it's pretty bad when the federal government starts headed the right way, but you're still trapped by your state. And the people in the northern part of the state, obviously, are... you know, of course, everybody's never of the same mindset, but you have a lot of people in the northern part of the state who would very much like to be something else, not a foreign country either, but they would like to be state of Jefferson or so that we can follow our laws, because obviously we're not living in a state that values that. So what do you think about?
Although there are parts of the state who would rather start their own country.
Yeah, there's that whole. And we'd like to help them because, you know what, they would just become Mexico. We wouldn't even have to change the map that much. They'd never last.
So we're talking about crime.
Yes.
And people are coming across the border of criminals because there's more money to be had over here to commit the crimes against American citizens.
Sure.
In terms of property, in terms of, the amount of lifestyle. I mean, it gives them incentives to come across the border if you're a criminal. And that's what people aren't realizing. How do we handle it? And then they're not accepting the criminals back into their own country. So in our jails are filled to about one-third with them. In some states, it's even more. What was it in Maryland, Chuck, where you're at? Was it like closer to 40?
Yeah, 40 to 50.
Oh, geez. You know, see...
Yeah,
and then maybe
we'll have a new place for Gitmo prisoners. You know, we can send a lot of these individuals down to Gitmo.
Yeah, they just I don't know if it passed yet, but that bill just went through, saying that they were going to leave it, keep it open, that you were prevented from transferring anybody out. You can't move Gitmo to the states. I forget some of the other provisions, but it's far from closed, which is good. At this point. So tell me this, as far as the Border Patrol itself goes, I realize, you know, it's pretty hard to generalize, but in general, do you think they're eager to do what they should be doing?
Yes, the Border Patrol came out and supported Trump early on because he's the only one that would secure the border. The border agents themselves have been handcuffed. They've been made babysitters, because when illegals come across the border under Obama, they would run up to an agent and say, arrest me, take me in, and then ship me where I want to go in the U.S. And that's what happened under Obama. The men, women, and children would come in, they would detain them, and then they would give them a free plane ticket to wherever they wanted to go in the U.S., wherever they had relatives, and give them a ticket and said, show up to court in 6 months. Guess what? they never showed up. And so with the Border Patrol is just furious that they can't do their job. They want to do their job. And so we have a lot of the senior Border Patrol agents in Washington, D.C. that have to be fired, and they have to be getting, they have to go because they don't believe in the policy of a secure border. And so we have to make sure that Trump puts the right people in there. He needs to hire as many of his political appointees as possible to make sure that his policies are enforced.
And as you've seen the obstruction with the appointees already and the inability to enforce across all government departments and agencies, there's where we're being pushed back with, you know, different forms of legislation we need to get through. Executive orders have to be operationalized. So this kind of thing Chuck is talking about and what you've been reading in the papers is really true. To actually make it happen, appointees have to come in and start changing the way the rule of law is looked at and executed in the way it's supposed to be on the borders, because we're talking about borders now, but that's across the board, you know, in all the different departments and agencies. So that's pretty much a travesty, because it's a cost. It's an economic, social cost to all Americans, senior citizens, the kids in the inner city. Everybody's paying the social cost for not enforcing the rule of law. And how I look at it, because I'm from Chicago, and I think we mentioned this earlier, the kids on the south side or on the west side in Austin, they're suffering terribly. And they got to live with the crime every day. They got to look over the shoulder every day. Their friends have been killed. So that's a whole different mindset. And that's in the United States. We're not talking about a foreign country. And look what Chuck was talking about earlier with our borders, the kind of stuff we look at, what's going on in other countries is happening on our own borders. With the kids coming across and being sold as sex slaves, they're doing that in Iraq and Syria, you know, and that's happening here. And then that whole pedophile ring gets supported through these kids that are coming across, and there's not enough parents around to cover them, or the parents themselves are using their own kids. So that whole thing about guidance and, you know, what America is and what we were before and America first, that's really important. That's really important for each one of us to step up and, you know, tell your congressman, email them, Twitter them, you know, use Facebook, write them, each one of them, about what your experiences are and what's been going on in your own neighborhoods, and let them know that you want changes made, and you want changes made sooner, not later. Because every time the government gets involved, it's happened time and time again, and Chuck's been talking about it, and I've been talking about with the border security since 2005 and 2006. Nothing's really been done substantially.
That would drive me nuts.
One of the key items that the Democrats keep pointing out is you're going to break up families.
Right.
Well, guess what? They break the families up to get them here, and then they want to have chain migration with all the rest of the families coming in. And so, you know, the U.S. is not breaking up families. We are enforcing the law, and if a kid is born of illegal parents in the U.S. and that child is a U.S. citizen, guess what? That child can go back to Mexico or Central America, wherever his parents or her parents came from, and grow up with their parents. And so we're not forcing people to break up families.
Right. Well,
we're looking at it in a compassionate way, in the way we grew up with altruism. And how is it happening to our country that's been turned upside down and backwards? Our people are suffering. It's not only the jobs, it's our lifestyle and the crime and the different, I would say, socioeconomic pressures that have been placed on people that don't have those jobs, and their kids need to get educated in schools. The cost is high. Now, President Trump is suggesting vouchers. That's a great way to go, because if you're in a place where the educational system isn't offering you the kind of education you need for your kids, you're going to get the kind of education by using the voucher to help fulfill your kid's dream. That's part of the American dream, to get your education.
Yeah, and the schools are freaking out, of course. We need to take one more really quick break here before the top of the hour. I'm sorry, guys. I'll do a better job next hour so that we don't have this rapid-fire thing going on. We are chatting about border security with Chuck and Bruce from Security Solutions Technology, and we will be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I keep hearing you're concerned about my happiness, but all that thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry enough. Are you and your friends are worried about me? I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. All in all, it's just another brick in the wall.
Should have known that one was coming. What's the perfect song for border security and schools?
Exactly. Multitasking.
The kids go to school here, and it's fine. I don't mind kids coming across the border, but they're not being checked. And one of the things the LA Times had, you know, it's in your territory, talked about is tuberculosis. The kids need to be checked from top to bottom. They're going to be bringing in diseases. You know, there's so many different, you got the hepatitis A and different kinds of things that the kids are bringing in. The whooping cough, you know, those things are, they spread and they spread fast. And if a kid gets it through a whole school system, the cost to the school may be, you know, for that school year, $25,000 for all those families or more. Because all those kids, you have to go to their doctors and they get treated and they get shots and, or whatever they need to do. You know, it depends on what it is. So that's what I'm talking about. When the kids are coming across the border, or their mothers, they need to be checked and checked thoroughly to see if they have anything going on with them, you know, in terms of, and the Mexican government also needs to be on the, you know, on the alert for those kind of things because it's devastating.
Yeah, and, it's not helping them at all.
No, not at all. And what I'm also talking about is their southern border of Mexico and all those people coming through. The UN has not engaged. Why, for all these years in El Salvador, where Chuck was talking about the drug and the gangs coming through, has not intervened over there. You know, we got El Salvador, we got Nicaragua, we got Guatemala. All of them are coming through Mexico's porous southern border, and then they come over through Mexico to us. Nothing has really been done. There's a responsibility that the UN has to Central America to take care of those problems. What's going on there with all those kids, with all those women being raped and being persecuted?
Right.
See, that's a human rights problem.
It should be. But all
it is a human rights problem, it's not being directly addressed.
Sure, and all we ever hear about is how if you want to close the border, you're anti-immigrant, and we're a nation of immigrants, blah, 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 which is a completely false argument.
I mean, those arguments are because they're not looking at the dynamic and how it's happening. If you can, I'm pro-immigrant, you know, I'm not. You know, but when you start talking about the illegal side, then we call them illegal aliens. Over the years, they don't call illegal aliens anymore. They call them immigrants.
Right.
They are illegal, and they are aliens, and they don't fit the model that we had when 50 years ago, 40 years ago, when we were, you know, doing this kind of thing, where we're looking at the impact on our society and what is the social and economic cost. And that's the critical part here.
It's huge.
Like I said, the UN has to intervene in Central America and El Salvador and Guatemala and Nicaragua. Why are those people coming through?
Yeah.
Why are those people having to live under those conditions at all?
All right, fellas, we've got to take a news break here. When we come back, though, maybe in one of our questions we can pick up the construction revisions. I have people who are interested to know what kind of construction things are planned for the border, along with all our other fun topics. We'll be back with Bruce and Chuck in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. You just have me, Aaron Ryan.
We get to mock Bill for the second week in a row.
And that was Bob Martin. I'm not here by myself. Exactly. It just feels like it. It's weird. I told him it's one of the hazards of growing up in a large family. You know, you need a foil. We're not good. We're not good as standalone players. But Bill's running a trade show today, so he's down selling tractors at the fairgrounds. So thanks to all the folks who...
The fairgrounds or the Civic Auditorium?
Oh, geez, I don't know. Well, obviously, it's not my day to watch him, so he could be anywhere.
Well,
he's doing something with tractors in Shasta County.
Is he at the home show?
I don't know. Okay. Maybe, yes.
Well, the Reading home show is today. The spring home and garden show is in 2 weeks at the fairgrounds.
Oh, he's probably doing that. Weeks.
He'll probably be gone in 2 weeks.
He's
yes.
like three of these this month. It was a big, big month.
What a lame excuse.
I know. Welcome to spring, huh? So thanks to all the folks who chip in and sponsor our show. If you'd like to help out, you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you can pitch in any amount you'd like. We'd be happy to have your help. We'd like to spread out and hit some other venues, maybe go back to Philadelphia if we can pull another sponsor to make that happen. We enjoyed broadcasting out there. We picked up a lot of interesting people and a lot of interesting topics.
They were killing it in Ireland.
We are killing it in Ireland. They love us. You know, they like that snarky humor. That's what's doing it. We'll have Bill back for you next week. The Welshman and the Irishman will be on a roll again next week. Let's see. So thanks to Powerhouse Solar for helping us out with this program. We really appreciate their sponsorship. They were founded in 2003 by Bruce and Susan Blake, and they've grown into the North State's premier solar company. They're nice folks. They have good solutions for you. You can reach them at 530-275-5600 or online, powerhousesolar.com. Super simple. All right. And now we veer back to the border. Got a lot of questions from people about this border security stuff. We have two fellows here from Security Solution Technology. We have Chuck Floyd, who's the Chief Executive Officer. He has a terrific resume that we have posted for you online. I will not read the whole thing. People hate it when we read to them. And Bruce Moran, who's the National Security Advisor. He and I chat regularly, and he sends me all sorts of interesting stuff. So we were talking about the border, and everybody thinks it's going to be a waste of money and it'll never be secured. But these guys, tasked with actually making it happen, tell us it can absolutely be done, and there's a plan in place. So I think that's exciting. What about the construction side of it, guys? How does that go?
Okay, so what has to happen first is that the CBP will be issuing an RFP sometime next week after the 15th of March.
Okay, so
they
that's customs
it a couple of times.
That's Customs and Border Patrol. We got to go back and do the acronyms for people.
Okay, Customs and Border Protection.
Right, so that's the CBP.
Yeah, CBP. And so what they have done is they issued what we call an RFI, request for information, on different fence designs, and they're going to look at the physical fence designs first before they get into the technology. Now, if you go back to 2005 and 2006, CBP set up a fence university in Texas. And so they had contractors from all over the U.S. build and show them their different fence designs, and they selected several fence designs. They put them on the border, and guess what? They don't work. So they're looking at new fence designs, and so it's going to be very simple. It's going to have to be an anti-climb, an anti-vehicle fence barrier. Now, along the southern border, it's not quite as hard as the northern border, but along the southern border, you have various terrain from the Gulf of Mexico through the Rio Grande to the Pacific Ocean. And so you have mountains, you have deserts, you have all kinds of different terrain. And so in these different types of terrain, you have different threats and different risks. And so what has to happen is that the border physical fence wall design has to be incorporated into the risk, the threat, and the terrain. And so there will probably be, in my opinion, three different designs for the entire border. And it's very feasible. I know what can be done, what should be done with these three different designs. And so we're, again, contractors are asked to bring in three different, you know, their designs in the next week or so. And so the first request for proposal, which they call phase one, will be the actual fence or wall design and what they have sent out so far, because President Trump said that he wants a great 30-foot wall. Well, they put in there a 30-foot concrete wall. Well, 30-foot concrete wall doesn't work that very well when you want to see on the other side. So you really need a fence kind of design. If you look at Israel, I've been to Israel many times. I was on the peacekeeping force over there between Egypt and Israel. And so those kinds of fences work, but, the Israelis have the technology. We have the technology, to go along the border. And so we have on the Mexican side, we'll have a smart fence. Then we'll should have a road in between. And then we have a gumb fence behind it. And then behind that, we should have the sensors and the cameras with mobile and fixed towers. And so that's kind of a way a layered security plan should be laid out.
And is this along the entire border? I mean, are there parts of the border that are kind of good the way they are? Or what's the strategy?
This needs to go across the entire border. They have certain areas that, again, in my opinion, maybe 10% of the border is secure. Other than that, you have to update it with all the new technologies and the physical barriers, because you have to make sure it's anti-climb and anti-vehicle. We did a lot of this when I was at the State Department for embassies around the world, and so I know it has to be done. We need to put the same technology, same program across the 2,000 miles, so that when we have it built by the contractor, then we have each contractor responsible for the maintenance of that fence or wall or whatever you want to call it for the next 10 years. Mm. Because that is a real key program that the Department of Homeland Security has, where they have contracted, and which probably is worth $150 million a year for a contractor to go fix certain parts of the fence that they have constructing now, where the Mexicans and the drug cartels knock over, or they destroy, or they knock holes in it. And so you have people repairing the fence and wall every day. And what we will suggest, matter of fact, we have a brick design that a mortar can hit, and it will not phase the brick design.
Hmm. Interesting.
And what Chuck is also saying is it's 24/7. He talked about the road. Well, the road is for rapid response. It's to get people there sooner, quicker, faster. You don't have any kind of way of getting to the border like that right now. And this is along the whole border. So if you can imagine, the increase of border security personnel and the ability to lock it down more, there's not going to be hardly any access at all. I mean, I don't see any access at all.
How long do you think it'll take?
It's really hard for me. I mean, they can come in, through the ocean or through a plane, but that would be a different, we're talking about the border itself, the physical border. And what Chuck is also saying is that there's seismographic capabilities
that's
going to be inlaid throughout the border. What that means is they can't dig.
Yeah.
You know when they're moving. Once the
RFP, request for proposal, is issued and awarded, within 2 years, if they have, if they break it down into 50-mile increments and have 40 construction contractors, the entire wall can be secure within 2 years.
Wow.
I'd like to reiterate that one point again, because when things are moving towards the wall, you know where they're at. So how are they going to get there? How do you get to the wall in the first place? It's going to be an electric wall. You're going to have drones. You have all the different. There's like a gully there that's built, like a little moat. They have to come through that. It's not going to be accessible.
How?
It's mind-boggling to me that something as simple as it's not simple, but the technology is very sophisticated. But the concept that Chuck is laying out is practical, sound, and cost effective. That's what we're looking at. And President Trump is a businessman. He knows that that's the way to go. Can you tell him the savings between what differences between the programs?
Oh, my gosh. And you know what? You guys are reading my mind, because I want to know how much it's going to cost to maintain, you know, to run things on this versus the crazy thing we have now with the patchwork. But we've got to take a really quick break first. We'll come right back, and that'll be the first thing we do. Chuck Floyd, Bruce Moran, Security Solutions Technologies. We're talking about the border. I think you guys should send this show to friends and family so they can support the effort. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
Got up next morning and I grabbed that gun and took a shot of cocaine and away I run. Made a good run, but I run too slow. They overtook me down in Juarez, Mexico. Laid in the hot joints, taking the pill.
Nice prelude. Nice prelude for the next part. Because we were curious about, you know, the drug trafficking. I'm assuming if you can keep the people out, you can keep the drugs out. Do you have to do anything different for that?
It's about the drug trafficking. Illegal drugs in the United States is about $113 to $120 billion. Cocaine itself, like he was talking about, that's about $29, $28, $29 billion.
Oh.
I mean, that's and that's what we're talking about on the borders. And that's what they're trying to do. The drug cartels are causing a tremendous amount of crime on the Mexican side of the borders, aside from what's going on over here. So if you get control of that, and where are the drugs coming in from? They're coming also in from South America. Once we closed Sherman and Fort Davis in Panama under Jimmy Carter, that whole corridor opened up for drugs to flow right through to the United States. So these kind of things we're looking at are demonstrative in terms of how the impacts will be and how the American people are paying the cost. And I said earlier, social cost, but I mean, our lifestyle has changed dramatically because of this impact. So, and as President Trump is saying, he's going to take care of the business. You know, it's law and order. Make sure the drug cartels are nowhere coming after them.
Nice. Well, with
talking about that issue, just this past week in Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan, Republican, announced that the state is in a crisis due to drugs. And so if you go in any small towns, cities throughout the U.S. over the last 15, 20 years, you know, the drug crisis is at epidemic levels. And so in order to help control that, you have to close the border. You have to get control of the drug situation.
And in Israel, I realize their country is much smaller and all that, but they control everything that comes in and out, although they still do have some tunnels. Has that been, do they not use the sonar type stuff that you're talking about?
No, because that's on the Egyptian side of the border, and so the Israelis really don't control that territory. If they did, they would stop it. And so, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because the politicians in the U.S. really don't want, in the past, they really have not wanted a solution to the immigration, illegal immigration crisis, and a comprehensive immigration plan. It's just like in Israel, between the Israelis and the Palestinians, all the Arab countries have not wanted a solution. Why? Because they keep the issue going, people make money on it, and same way here in the U.S., that, you know, the politicians have not wanted a solution, but under President Trump, a solution can be had, not only with the security of the border, but a comprehensive immigration program where if we need workers, they can come in on a vetted green card under an employer, no family, no welfare benefits, and then when they finish whatever the job is, then they go home. And so there is room now for legislation or a comprehensive immigration policy along with the securing the border.
I think that's awesome. And I'm going to add onto the website. I hope people will go look at it. I get into this discussion with people quite a bit. They all say that, well, if we get rid of all the illegal aliens, who's going to pick our crops? And Pew Research did an exhaustive report. I mean, it's like 9 pages of charts and graphs and numbers and everything. But when you drill down into it, 4% of the illegal immigrant population works in agriculture.
Yeah.
4%.
I mean, you look at all the trades, you know, the unions are being blasted anymore.
Yep.
You look at the construction, you look at the lawn service, you look at plumbing, you look at electricians, all of it, you know, Mexicans and illegals. And so a lot of my friends are builders in the Washington, D.C. area, and they had a heck of a time getting certified and qualified individuals to be on their jobs, on their construction jobs. And so to get rid of the illegals, you're going to have more people in the trade areas like there used to be.
Yeah, I don't think people think that it's all about crops in California, but here we go. I knew I could get it quickly. Comparing occupations of U.S.-born and unauthorized immigrants, and this is 2008, this particular table. Service industry, 30%. Construction and extraction, 21%. Production, installation, and repair, 15%. This is percentage of the illegal alien population that was in the country less than 10 years ago. Transportation and material moving, 8%. Farming, fishing, and forestry, 4%. Sales and administrative support, 13%. Professional management, business, and finance, 9%. So if you look at sales, office, administrative, professional management, business, and finance, that's 24% right there. Of the illegal alien population, and you look at the volume of people there, and then you look at all the people that are unemployed, I'm kind of thinking they're not just picking crops.
Yeah, absolutely. You're on to something, and a politician should listen.
Huh, I know one. I think I'll forward it to him. Just kidding around. What a smarty pants. I don't have Bill here to make fun of, so I got to create my own fun. Okay, so... Go back to the E-Verify. I've been told many times by many guests that if we instituted E-Verify throughout the country, it was not voluntary, it was mandatory. Every employer must verify that the people working for them are American citizens. That, I mean, the bulk of people who are here illegally would self-deport. The ones that are here to work, anyway. Do you think that's true?
I think a lot of the illegals, what you do E-Verify, will self-deport, absolutely. Because there are not going to be any jobs, there won't be any magnet for them to be drawn to the U.S., and they know that if they get caught, they're going to go to jail. You know, you look at Kate Steinle in San Francisco. She was killed by an illegal immigrant who'd been captured by CBP and ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and he was thrown out of the country 8 times.
Wow.
And, you know, and so... You look at what has to happen, and if we institute E-Verify, you're going to have less problems. You know, you look at the one woman in California recently that was arrested, and she will be deported because she stole identity. And so you have millions of our Social Security numbers being stolen every year. 2 years, say 3 years ago, in Atlanta, the IRS sent over 20,000 checks to one address in Atlanta. Now, you tell me that they don't have any IT kind of checks and balances and people who are fraudulent and illegal and hackers, they go in there and get people's identity and use it for nefarious reasons, and we need to put a stop at that.
Oh, my gosh, yes. That's crazy. And, you know, I don't even understand why we... you know, argue about this, you know, as a country, why this is even a debate. It just seems to be, I don't know, just seems to be common sense.
Yep. That's what I was saying. They don't understand the laws when they come across and it becomes a lawless underground state for them. and then they expect things that aren't given to American citizens. American citizens are sidelined because we're obeying all the rules, going through all the laws, and, you know, that's a contradiction in terms.
Yeah.
If an American citizen creates a crime, the American citizen is arrested right away. In these sanctuary cities, if an illegal creates a crime, they put them out and let them go free.
It's true, too. So we're not even telling our own citizens that, you know, like, remember we used to have civics a long time ago, and being a good citizen was kind of part of your school grade. You know, we used to get grades for citizenship. We don't do any of that anymore. It's kind of like you do what you have to do to get by. And if you have to break the law, but it's been okayed by the government, then go ahead and do it. What a terrible message to send our children.
Well, you know, that's because the liberals and the Democrats have taken over the school systems, and they promote their liberal agenda, and they fill their young kids full of mush, and they really don't teach them about the Constitution. They don't teach them U.S. history, and they try to do everything but that.
Yeah, it's totally crazy, and at the end of the day, it has a bad end. I mean, this all has a bad end. We can't just keep doing this stuff and thinking, well, it'll sort itself out, because as we keep doing this, we overload an immigration system in this country.
That's not what we signed up for.
No, and you know, our immigration rules and process here are kind of a pain.
Kids, we were taught morals and ethics and citizenship and, you know, respect for other people and all the different things that you do to grow up and, you know, live the American dream. All that's been thrown out the door. So,
yeah, and we're old, so now we sound like old people, but
yeah.
At some point it's going to have to swing back around, because people are going to want their kids to be able to, you know, walk to school and ride their bikes outside, and you know, we can't turn all of our, well, a lot of our big cities are not safe. You know, I mean, we used to go to San Francisco to goof off periodically, you know, once a year, twice a year. I wouldn't spend a nickel there if I had a gun to my head. I guess I should be careful with my joke, but I mean, really, it's not fun there anymore. It's dirty, it's nasty, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that is correct.
And I'm not coming to Chicago either, Bruce, so thanks for that. But no. Okay.
Good pizza.
Well, you know, that is a draw, right? I might change my mind there. San Francisco got a lot of fish, but you know, you can find fish elsewhere. Quick break, since it's 1:30, quick break. I hate this daylight savings time thing. I don't know how screwed up you guys are, but I'm like, I can't. I switched all the clocks at like 10 o'clock last night just so it wouldn't sneak up on me, though. All right, we'll be right back.
We did that in honor of Elizabeth.
Exactly. I remember one time our co-host, we called her. We used to be in the morning, a morning show, and half hour into the program, we called her. We're like, hey, are you coming over? She goes, I'm just drinking coffee. She forgot. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Hello, walls. How things go for you today? Don't you miss her?
And she up and walked away. And I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. But lonely walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, Wendy. Well, I see that you're
the wall song. Welcome back. We lost our guest, Chuck Floyd. Bruce, are you still in there with us?
I'm still here.
You are running solo. We lost Chuck. I just looked at my cell phone. He tried to call me. But I had it on mute because, you know.
And I tried to call him, and of course, he's on his cell phone, so I got his voicemail.
We had a little snafu. So where would you like to
Chuck,
go
if
now?
If you're listening, hang up.
By the way, I just wanted to let people know I did add that that table that I read with those statistics, and I linked it to the PewHispanic.org website that pulled all those stats. It's a giant article. So if that's of interest to you, or you're tired of hearing about how we shouldn't, can't, won't fix the immigration problem because we need to pick our crops, you're ridiculous. We can close the border. We can build defense. We can afford it. The Mexicans can pay for it. And there are only 4% of them are working in agriculture. So there, I think we've debunked pretty much everything. We should run the world.
Ah. Well, there's something we can cover. I mean.
All right, go for
there's
it.
There's a few ton of things.
Oh, and the phone is ringing. You just never know.
As Chuck was discussing the border itself, and he had worked with the Israeli government.
Oh, and Chuck's back.
Yeah.
We found him again. So it's okay.
There you are. Yep. Hanging out in the border.
Oh, I'm here.
We had a little challenge there.
You made a run for the border.
it's going through the CIA area to cut it off, you know.
Oh, yes. It makes perfect sense.
Oh, I'm at Taco Bell.
So I was talking about the border particulars. If you wanted to go over that, but that's not necessary. If Aaron had a particular topic you want us to cover.
No, because we're counting on you guys. You're the experts. What do people need to know? What are some other things that you guys hear all the time? Because we hear all this stuff, you know, in the media, and it's so frustrating. One of the guys in our chat room had said Mark Levin is constantly harping on how the, you know, the border will never be secured. Trump's not doing what he said. Blah, blah, blah.
Mark Levin is off on that one. He's usually 100% right on other things. I heard his discussion about what I thought was pretty formative and well researched on the current problems that were going on with the Russians and the, you know, various problems and how the Trump administration was dealing with it. His argument was well laid out. But in this particular, I have a deep respect for him, that's why I'm saying this. But in this particular area, he is very weak-kneed. He doesn't really know what's being done on the particulars, on the strategy, tactics, and what we're working on is operations to make sure this does go down in the right way. So I don't know what he has in mind, but we're looking at things as they're actually going through the government process and being done in a, you know, like Chuck is saying, they're bidding on the contract. So, Chuck, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, one of the things that I suggested is that we have a 24/7 video surveillance of every contractor that is on the wall, building the wall, whatever. And so we would have people, American citizens, who can dial in and take a look and see what's going on. We can give public relations updates on, you know, how the wall is coming, who's doing what kind of obstacles we're running into, what kind of drug cartel or other coyote instance are we having. One of the big problems that I think American people have to really understand is that a lot of people in Congress say one thing in their district and then they say something else in Washington, D.C. And so you're going to have a lot of people for it and against it. But what has to happen is that a one design has to be implemented across the entire southern border, whether districts like it or not. And then once it's implemented, you'll see a big difference in the attitude of people, congressmen, and many others who have been talking out of both sides of their mouth.
And one way to look at it, I think, is like 911. You have a 911 center, you make the call, and then they send out patrol cars. Well, this is going to be the same way. 24/7 operations is going to be the way the border is going to be operated. It's not operated like that now. So if Mark Levin took a position, well, is it going to be run the way it was before, and you don't get there right away, and you don't have the, you know, technology in place? Yes, he's right. But if you're looking at the way we're looking at it, it's a practical, sound, and effective way to actually run a border, then he'll take a, you know, different look at it. Because I don't think he's talking to any people that, like Chuck, on how this is really going to be actuated and what the real benefits are. And I'm not just talking about closing down the border. We're talking about having the border in place and protecting the American citizenship and the compassion shown on the border, which I'm talking about. They're not talking about the compassion for the American people and America, and how that's going to protect them.
Talk to us about, we kind of got sidetracked there, I think, with some technical stuff, but, you know, the idea that we're spending money now. It isn't like this is a new cost. We're currently spending money to, quote, protect the border. It's just not being, they don't have the tools, the direction, all of it to get the job done. What's going to be the cost going forward? Is it exponentially higher? Can we do it with what we're spending now? I mean, what do you think at this point?
The cost will not be higher. In the past, under Obama, you had the Border Patrol agents acting as babysitters, as I said before. And so now they will have a policy to enforce. And so you're going to have agents, and, you know, we spent, the Obama administration spent over $100 million a year just spending kids and mothers and others on airplanes all over the U.S., when they came across the border. So all that will be stopped. And so you're going to see a reduction in cost of what has to happen on the border once the border is in place. And one of the things I'd like to talk about before the show ends is how do people across the nation and your listeners, what can they do to put pressure on the politicians and others to make sure the border is built?
Okay. Bob? Your option, start that process or take a quick break and then run to the top of the hour.
Or why don't we take a quick break right now?
All right, we'll do that. And then, Chuck, you got it till the top of the hour.
Okay.
It's a pretty good comprehensive look here at what's going on the old border. And actually, I'm excited about it. It always seemed like an exercise in futility, but under these guys' capable leadership, we're actually going to get some stuff done. Imagine that. You're listening to We the People. Join us online. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Minding my business along comes Big Brother.
old Wonderwall. Who knew? Who was that?
Oasis.
Huh, never heard of them. They need to get out more. They must have been after the 70s.
They were 90s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know about them. All right, Chuck, what do you have for us? It's all you. Or not. Chuck, are you in there?
Bruce, anybody?
Okay, this is Chuck. You want to talk about what people can do?
You were scaring me.
Yeah, I think we're here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give a list of what I think people should be able to do to help the project going forward.
Okay.
So first off, call the White House. Tell President Trump that you're with him. You want the border sealed and protected. Then call your congressman in both the House and the Senate. Make sure they know what you want. Call your local elected leaders. Get on social media. Get on Facebook. Get on radio programs. Get on, write articles for the newspapers. Talk to your neighbors. You know, the squeaky wheel gets noticed. This is what has happened in the past. You know, when President Obama was asking people to help him, he said, get in their face. And so this is what has to happen. People have to stand up for their rights. They have to stand up for the rule of law. And they have to go out and do what they can in their immediate communities to the national scene.
Yeah, because right now, the people we're hearing from are all the people who think that, you're a racist or a bigot or a hater or whatever, if you want to close the border. So for everyone who is in favor of that, who believes that the Trump administration will do it, this isn't really the time to go silent. I mean, be useful to help your members of Congress in the House and the Senate.
Yep. You got to make noise.
Yep. I would say, Mitch McConnell needs to hear about it and Paul Ryan, because they're head of the House and the Senate. And those people have had experiences. Write your experiences down. Twitter, email, however you want to get that information to them about what you've had and your encounters in your own neighborhoods, on the border, in your cities, in the rural areas, with the drug trafficking. Let them know. Weigh in. Say what it is. Get it down. Because they will respond. But people aren't everybody stood up in the last election. But we got to stand up again and support this cause of President Trump. And the only way it's going to get done if people stand up and be counted. America has to be Americans first.
Is the legislation and the funding and all that, is it already in place and just has never been carried out?
There are still funds left over from the Secure Border Act. Legislation is there to do what we need to do. We will need additional funding until we can get these other sources to come up with the money.
All right. So do you think this is a hot priority? Like, you think we'll see it this year, getting started?
Absolutely. There are five major areas across the southern border that must be sealed immediately. We know what they are. The Homeland Security knows what they are. If they do those five immediately, you'll see a big difference in the drug cartels and the drug trafficking. So, again, the RFP should be dropped next week, the request for proposals. They select a design. And then within 90 to 120 days, construction can start within 120 days.
Oh, nice.
And Chuck, can you explain your difference in the contractors versus the way we first looked at it?
Yeah, under President Bush, what happened is that they did not listen to, reason as far as border security plan, layered security, what had to happen, and they gave it to one integrator, Boeing. Boeing is not a construction contractor. They build airplanes and they do different things. And so what we're saying is that the contract strategy has to change. It cannot go to a Lockheed Martin, a Raytheon, and all these big defense contract integrators. They have their own lanes in DOD and other places. We need construction contractors on the wall doing 50 miles apiece. And if they do that and then they embed the technology underneath the construction contractor, just like they do in tall buildings. You look at all the buildings that Trump has built. They focus on the fiscal structure, and then they have all of the technology behind it. And so that's what has to happen to the wall. We cannot give this kind of contract to one integrator and expect it to come out correctly. If they do that, it will fail.
That makes a lot of sense. So who would technically oversee the whole build? If you guys are the architect of it, then do you oversee all the contractors, or how does that work?
Well, the Secretary of Homeland Security has to make that decision. What I'm suggesting is that they set up an entirely separate office to do this. They can do that with about 20 people. Then what they do is they have a services that were better known, or a better known company, be what we call the PMO, Project Management Office. And then from that, we have a PMO in Washington, D.C. that will monitor everything, and we have a sub-PMO in each southern border state. So you have four separate
sub-PMOs
from Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. And you have embedded within the contractor a core of engineer, construction manager, a CM, but we call them a CM. And so this person has lots of experience in scope, schedule, budget, and we monitor everything that that contractor does 24/7. We have weekly reports. And again, we are on this just like in the IT world, we have agile development. And so instead of being agile development in IT, we're going to have agile development on the border security. And in the IT world, we also say SaaS, software as a service. Well, here we need security as a service, where we can hire people, we can hire companies to provide ships and cranes and security services and everything else. So there is a contracting way that we can get this accomplished very shortly, and the entire border can be secured within 2 years.
That's fantastic. And your company, if I'm not mistaken, you guys have built embassies around the world. You've overseen that.
Well, when I was the presidential appointee under President Bush, and so I was at what we call Overseas Building Operation, OBO. And so we were in charge and programmed $50 billion worth of construction throughout the world on all the embassies that the United States has, embassies, consular affair buildings, also residential buildings that we own. And so, you know, this kind of program, I know how to run it, know how to do it. But again, the administration just has to listen to what needs to be done. And right now, you know, I have no idea who's in charge over there, who's putting all this together.
So, you know, when I work with Chuck, how I describe it, he knows it from top to bottom, the construction. It's not only the construction of the building itself in the design, in security, but it's the technology that goes on top. Because if you think of what needs to be protected at an embassy, that kind of knowledge is very sophisticated, and that's what Chuck is bringing to the border security. He's bringing his knowledge in how you protect the ambassador and the kind of security you need there. It's 24/7 operations. It's a way they would run a whole embassy, and now you're taking that fertile knowledge and you're able to replicate it and bring it down to a real practical level on the border. I think that's a sound way to go.
That's a really sound way to go. And I just wanted, I knew the credentials, but I wanted people to know that you guys aren't, you know, you haven't been building like little kids' playgrounds and just thought you'd, hey, swing for the fence, you know, and literally go build the border wall.
What Chuck didn't mention was he designed a 10-acre compound that's still in effect today for the total security of an embassy. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. That's fine.
Yeah, he is the designer. I mean, I'm talking about just not putting plans together. He actually makes sure, you know, with personnel, you know, the Marines have to be there. They have to have a certain amount of diplomatic security for the ambassador. He designs and makes things happen.
Chuck's the man.
From top to bottom. You know, these are things that just go with the territory, but most people don't know the experience that Chuck had and what he brings to the table.
Thank you very much, fellas. We've run out of time. So that was Bruce Moran, who's the National Security Advisor. We've been chatting with Chuck Floyd, Chief Executive Officer of Security Solutions Technology. And I do hope that you will go send this show to friends and family. We'll have the archive up quickly. And you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. God bless America. Day. Thanks to all your listeners.
Have an awesome Sunday. We look forward to updates. Updates. Thanks very much.
Thank you so very much.